week on Soulful Conversations, we have somebody I'm lucky enough to call a really good friend, Mr. Harry James Angus, the twin frontman of famous Australian roots band The Cat Empire. We know him from his work doing that and killing it live for, geez, going on for 20 years soon, but Harry is also a phenomenal, phenomenal solo artist as well. And from ripping playing the trumpet as a band leader and his amazingly dynamic vocals that have always impressed the hell out of me, he's equally at home singing, playing an acoustic and writing these elaborate story songs that are just so impressive. He's done so many amazing things in music, and we were so lucky to have him on Soulful Conversations, where he really did open up honestly and share some of his struggles with being in that very popular party band and having to put on the show that everybody's come to. And this is all around the world, that people hold going to a Cat Empire gig as dear and a time for them to party and dance and really get into things. But he really did give us real insight into what that's like and how he does actually feel a little bit confused about what direction to go with it at the moment. We also, on a personal level, shared some stuff about vocals, you know, because we've both been guys who've really pushed our vocals over the years, and he's interested in trying a different approach to vocals, which you can see as a metaphor, not pushing it, not forcing it so much, not, I guess, trying to be tough and put in effort, but looking at it a different way of allowing it to happen. And he feels like that could actually be a stronger expression of a more potent musicality. So I really do have to thank Harry for this interview and really opening up on a deeper level and being 100% candid and honest about where he's at. And that is what we're about here at Soulful Conversations. So thanks a lot for being on this journey with us, and I hope you really enjoy this interview with Harry James Angus. Welcome to Soulful Conversations with Ash Grunewald. In this podcast, we interview inspiring and amazing people, musicians, surfers, and experts in mindset, creativity, health, well-being, and making the world a better place. I'm tired of beating around the bush. I want to go deep and have a soulful conversation.
This podcast is brought to you by Earth Bottles. At Earth Bottles, we are on a mission to end single-use plastics, offering a full range of beautiful double-insulated bottles, reusable coffee cups, food and tea canisters, stainless steel straws, bags, and lots of plastic-free eco-goodies. Earth Bottles proudly supports the Breast Cancer Network of Australia, Beyond Blue, Hope for Health, Clean Coast Collective, 15 Trees, Bali Baby House, and the UN Refugee Agency. So head over to www.earthbottles.com.au for a 10% discount using the promo code ASHLOVESME. Together, we can make a change and break up with single-use plastics.
You are in Melbourne because you are on your way. Where are you on your way to?
To America and Canada.
With the Cat Empire?
Yep, with the Cats. About to go for a month-long tour. It's still freezing too.
Looking forward to it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, these days I love being on tour, and I also hate leaving home. So it's like... It's mixed feelings. There's a lot of pros and there's a lot of cons.
Mm. And your pad up in the, for listeners there, Harry moved up to our area of northern New South Wales. And then as soon as him and Emmy and his lovely family moved up, we bloody well moved to Bali, which really annoyed me. But he's just got a beautiful block. Let me just digress for 1 minute. How are you loving... Oh, are you loving being in the Northern Rivers up there?
Yeah, most of the time. It's pretty good. I think you have to move there if you're a musician with kids.
It's become a rite of passage.
There's a lot of musicians walking around, a lot of studios in them hills. It's really good. Like, you know, I'm not a surfer like you, but I'm starting to learn to surf, but we live up in the forest, so it's just like, you know, it's just a place to come home to and just feel like you're, it's pretty amazing. It's just up in the trees. We are pretty close to some pretty nice, you know, cafes and stuff, but we could be anywhere. It feels like another country.
Yeah, absolutely. And how's that studio going?
Yeah, nearly finished.
Yeah, right.
It's always nearly finished.
You would have recorded in there already.
Yeah, I've done a few things and so has Em.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but mainly we just kind of use it for practice. We just go up there and practice and keep the doors open. Even though we spent all this money soundproofing it, we just practice with the doors open.
What are your plans with that thing? Have you got like, okay, at some stage Em's going to do an album or I'm going to do an album, or is it just a songwriting space?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see it as like, yeah, just a place to work in every day. So that can be practice or writing, or it could be recording. But then also I see it as a space where I suppose my friends can come and record as well. That's what I'd really love to do with it, is to, it's just there as a place where people I know who kind of need a space to go and write or record in can kind of come and stay with us and hang out and, you know, do their thing, and we get to see them and we get to make music together. And yeah, it's just that day-to-day thing. I mean, when it comes to making my own albums and recording my own music, that could happen at home or it could happen anywhere, really. Like, I haven't recorded a record up there yet, but I've done a lot of trumpet practice.
You've been playing for the best part of your life, playing the trumpet. How do you feel like your playing's going?
Oh, it's always, you know, we've talked a lot about this, about practice, and like, I know you're on an amazing practice journey, which is so awesome. I'm jealous. Like, for me, it's always, you know, I get to the end of a tour and I'm just feeling so good with my playing. And I think, when I get home, I'm just going to keep riding this train. I'm going to practice, you know, 3 hours a day at least, and I'm just not going to stop. You know, I'm going to keep building on this. And then I get home and I kind of put the trumpet away and I don't pick it up again for a month until the next time I've got a gig. Yeah. And that's often the way it goes for me, you know. And then I get it out again and I'm kind of like starting from zero. Or not from zero, but like, you know, my zero. Like the worst I could possibly be at this time in my life. And then, yeah, I don't know. So I'm trying to kick that habit. And so my practice is becoming more and more regular. But I've never been a really great practicer the way some people are.
I think life works in those sort of yin-yang kind of things. And the only reason that I got so crazy onto a practice regime was because there was so much space to be filled by, you know, spending the better part of my career not practicing at all. So I know what that's like. But the other thing is like trumpet. I mean, it would be hard to practice, I guess. Like, you really have to find your own space because it's a loud instrument.
It's not like sitting on the couch. You know, I think a lot of people practice guitar while they're watching TV. That's kind of an image I have in my mind of teenagers sitting in their rooms watching Neighbours or something and also just noodling around on the guitar. And that kind of like just really nice, relaxing, casual practice. Yeah, you don't really do that with trumpet. Trumpet's more like, I don't know, it's like a series of exercises you have to go through, and it's all about keeping your muscles in shape, except instead of being, you know, kind of beautiful muscles that people can look at, they're these tiny little muscles in, but people can hear them. It's like push-ups for your lips, essentially, trumpet practice.
And what is that called? Is that called your embouchure or something like that?
Yeah. How did you know that?
I don't know. Okay, yeah.
Your embouchure, which is, I don't know, the French is bush is mouth in French, so I guess it has something to do with that. It means like your mouthness or your mouth.
Right.
The arrangement of your mouth. Anyway, yeah, so it's all about embouchure. And embouchure is, you know, you really picked the wrong trumpet player to talk about embouchure. Like, I don't even know what it is. I know that other trumpet players watch each other play and say, oh, he's got really good embouchure, but I don't know what it is. It's to do with your lips just being kind of like consistent and like a valve that doesn't change very much as you go from like high range to low range, or as you go from soft to loud, your lips don't move very much, which is kind of what your vocal cords do. You know, your vocal cords don't change. They always stay the same, and everything around it changes. And I guess with trumpet, it's kind of like you're supposed to do the same thing with your lips, you know, keep them consistent like a machine.
Have you, I was going to ask with vocals, and I wanted in this podcast to ask you about vocals. Have you ever gone to that thing of trying to, because you sing so high and sing low, have you ever tried to keep, like, kind of sing the same way when you're singing ultra high and ultra low?
Oh, man. Well, last time I was at your house, you were showing me that vocal fry thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah,
kind of, to me, that's when you say that, what that makes me think of that vocal fry thing where you, what is it? You kind of like, you get that, yeah, that kind of low.
I haven't done that for ages, but you go, and then you go sing your thing or whatever. Then you go back to that.
So when I imagine going from low to high and kind of keeping, I guess, all the structural bits of your, you know, vocal anatomy the same, I find that's what I think of. I think of like going from, but I can't do it. I'm a terrible singer and I've got terrible technique. That's what
my God, you're about the best I've ever heard. Terrible singer. I love that. This is what we've got to get into.
Do you hate the sound of your own voice when you hear it?
Lately, over the last year or so, yeah, definitely. Well, I was thinking about that trumpet thing, and I was thinking, like, this year I've wanted to start. I have been working on the old shred on the guitar, and that's sort of going along at its pace, and I'd like to keep going how I was when we spoke last, which, for people who are listening, I was confiding in Harry when I sort of, like, probably a calendar year ago, I started on this project of really practicing a lot and, you know, trying to do a few wailing solos on the old guitar. But I've had to slow because I'm doing things like podcasting and book writing and stuff. But in the interim, I'm still working on my guitar, but in the interim, I'm like, the main thing is vocals. I've got to work on my vocals. And I got a few singing lessons and, you know, I got some things to practice, but I just find it really hard when you're surrounded by your family and stuff to actually just find a place to practice vocals. Do you ever find that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as you know, I'm a big fan of going on this journey of investigating how you sing and, you know, and I never really got a singing lesson until the last couple of years. And I wish I'd been getting them the whole time, my whole career. Yeah. For me, it's like, you can just go so deep with it. Like there's technique, there's practice, but then beyond that, there's kind of like, all this psychological stuff. And then there's just so much going on when you talk about your voice and singing and, you know, how you put it all together and how you want to make it sound. And yeah, so, I mean, for me, practice the last few years has been kind of like all inclusive. Like it's been sitting down at the piano and singing, and it's also been kind of like working on my kind of like my attitudes to other things as well.
So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, I don't want to get too mystical, but like,
get mystical. That's what this podcast is about.
Well, okay, well, let's talk about singing, you know. Like when you're a baby, it's like the first thing you have is your voice. You know, it's the thing that calls your mother to you, and you use it to get love, essentially. And that's such a simple thing, but also there's so many things that can go wrong there as well. You know, like what if your mum's got to work at 7 o'clock the next morning, and so she needs to kind of lock you in a room down the hall all night and ignore your crying and, you know, put you on some kind of feeding regime. And I'm not going to get into a whole thing about how other people should look after their own children, but I'm just saying right from the start, there's a thing about your voice and how you get love and how hard you have to try to get love. And then you get a bit older and there's your voice. And does anyone listen to you when you use it? You know, what person do you have to become before people start listening to you and taking you seriously? And is that really you? And all this stuff is forming your identity. But it's also forming your identity as any kind of singer that you're going to be. Because, well, for example, if you feel a need to be tough, then you're going to sing tough and you're going to push hard and you're going to try hard. And that might make you sound a certain way, but it, like, what if you got to a point in your life where you suddenly realized you know what? I've been acting tough this whole time, but I'm actually really, really vulnerable, you know? And then what effect would that have on your voice and on your singing and how you use all those muscles and even how you step up on stage, you know? And that's been, I think that's kind of been my journey. Like I've gone from kind of seeing myself as one kind of person who performs in a particular kind of way. And then I kind of looked at that and thought, even though everyone else loves what I've been doing here, I can see that some of the things that are motivating me to perform and sing in that way are actually not good things. They're bad things. And so is there something else? Is there like another road and a deeper way to find self-expression? And like for me, and this is something we've talked about a lot, the thing that keeps coming up is effort. It's like you think you have to try so hard to make the music happen. And really the deepest and the most powerful music is actually effortless. And all your effort is just a blockage getting in the way of this kind of amazing river of music that's always there. And you just have to kind of let it come out. And so when it comes to vocal technique, I think a lot of the things we learn, they're actually like blocking this amazing source of musical power that we've got. That's just, you just have to kind of get out of the way and let it come out.
Doing all the preparation work for it to happen, but then for it to be an effortless thing, it would be kind of really special and surreal to just sort of be the one singing that and feeling it.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And that's like the dream. But then, you know, there's this other thing where it's like, well, okay, so we take this very noble like idea of what, I don't know, what music could be or what singing could be, what performing could be, and then put that into a bar or a club night after night, you know, with, I don't know, shitty speakers and, you know, drunk punters and delayed flight, all the kind of mundane everyday things of being actually a professional musician on tour. And it's like, how are you gonna, and even some of the stuff that comes with, I guess, having a successful career in music, it's like, you know, you become known for doing certain things and people want you to do them over and over again, more or less, and you want to give them that, but how do you do all that and also do it effortlessly night after night?
Yeah, I guess that's a catch 22, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer.
I know for me, one answer that I did have for a little while, that little while being about 15 to 20 years, was inspiration in a bottle, so that you can sort of go, just get a little bit fucked up and it's on. But that kind of started to wear thin. So like, because that makes everything into Groundhog Day, actually, like that. And I found that at one point, like drinking and having a good time and partying and whatever made it fun every night. I feel like that really leveled everything out after a while and just made it the same. That made it more samey than not. So that's been an interesting thing touring in the last year when I haven't been drinking, to just, I feel like it's there's more actual variation and more inspiration that way than the old way for me anyway, which is interesting.
Yeah, drinking's a big one, isn't it? Well, it's almost like when I think probably the majority of musicians start out drinking at least a little. I'm sure there's plenty that don't, but there's certainly plenty that do. And then you can kind of go two ways, I think, if you're actually having a career in music where you're playing a lot, you can either keep drinking more and more and more, or eventually you're going to stop.
Yeah,
essentially.
I think so.
There's only really those two roads available to you. And what happens is when people stop drinking all of a sudden is they get up on stage and they realize, oh my God, like I've got no idea how to do this. I've never done this before, because that wasn't me. That was like confident me who doesn't have a clue what's going on around them. You know,
yeah.
this is normal me who's, you know, has all the normal social anxieties and, you know, is noticing that there's some guy standing in the middle of the crowd with his arms crossed, looking really, really unimpressed with, you know, this thing that I'm pouring my heart out into, and he's just really killing my vibe, you know. So then you got to learn how to deal with all that without your old buddy alcohol.
Yeah, you get left with your mind. Oh my God. That's what it's getting left with your mind could be the scariest thing ever, really. I guess what I'm chasing out of music now is to, I don't want to be left with my mind on stage. I want to use it a little bit, but not much. But I want to sort of be transported to somewhere beyond the mind, to let it happen and let it flow out of me without having to get out of my mind to get to that state. And I think that's the kind of difference. But it's a tougher way to do it this way, but I think probably way better for everyone, because it's a way better performance when you get a break from your mind through the fact that you're, you know, transcending it and taking it somewhere different. And I think the audience does know when that's happening, and they go with you. And that's the special moments in music.
Well, that's the paradox, because everyone, as a performer, and even from, you know, like if you were to watch any of these TV talent shows like X Factor or whatever, you would be forgiven for thinking that the ultimate goal of anyone getting up on stage and particularly singing a song is for them to be incredibly confident. It's almost like, well, that's what we want. You know, that's what you have to do if you want to be a performer. You have to get up on stage, and it doesn't matter how nervous you really are. You got to like just jump around and, you know, climb up the speaker stacks and punch the air and, you know, high kicks and transcend and transcend in that way. And I think people love that, because they're watching a person just kind of transcend the general social oppression that everyone feels, you know, to not do that all the time.
Yeah.
But then I don't know. But then I think beyond that, like, there's actually nothing more powerful than when you see someone get up on stage and you can tell that they're really, really scared and nervous. And then they open their mouth and something really true and incredibly powerful comes out, you know, and something vulnerable that everyone feels inside themselves. You know, they all know it's true. Like, I think in a way that's worth so much more than being a confident performer. And that's kind of what I'm shooting for. And that's kind of what I'm, especially in the Cat Empire, which is such a kind of energetic party band, that's what I'm having trouble reconciling, these two things, that on the one stage there's the confidence and the jumping up and down and that type of performance. And then on the other side there's something which I really crave, which is the truth, you know, like just the, you know, to use a biblical quotation, the still small, you know, how he says, you know, Moses and Aaron went up the mountain and God appeared in the burning bush. And then it says, it wasn't a loud voice. God spoke with a still small voice, but it was undeniably the voice of God, you know? And I think that is, especially in this era of, you know, Instagram I don't know. I just feel like we're crying out for performers who can find, the still small voice, which is actually very powerful. Nina Simone, take Nina Simone, you know, like she was capable of these kind of towering rages and these incredibly intimate, raw ballads, you know, and just she could do it all. And to me, she's like a singer who I don't know, just like taps into something so real when compared to, I don't know, something that feels really manufactured. Like, I mean, I don't even listen to any of it, but like, I don't know, just, you can just tell sometimes. I mean, I'm not not saying for a second that all pop music is bad, but there is a certain type of pop music. You can even just tell from the lyrics. It's like, you know, it's not kind of reaching out the back of its soul into the universe to try and gather angel dust to sprinkle on people. It's just trying to make money, you know? That's all it is.
Knowing your history, though, the history of the Cat Empire, which is amazing success with really never been superficial music, but it's party music. So is that what you're, it's from coming from the background of people partying to your music that makes you want to search for that quieter, more genuine, heartfelt?
Well, I don't think it has to be quiet necessarily. Like, I remember particularly in the early days of the Cat Empire, because back then improvising was such a big part of the band. And it was also kind of a big part of my job in the band was to, I guess, really just stand in the middle of the stage, in the middle of the concert, and try and push the whole thing really into the unknown. And then there was often, well, when it worked, there was this amazing kind of euphoria of, you know, just spontaneity, of like spontaneous live energy. And it was the participants in that were the crowd and the band and me. And I felt in those moments very clearly the feeling of like being a vessel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and I remember those moments too. And I loved it. Yeah, it was amazing. I remember seeing you guys at a few supports and like some in Europe and different things, and seeing you just rock the house going on these amazing journeys and just jamming out. And yeah, that dynamic between like the hits and then just being this really cool, really proficient jam band kind of thing. Oh, it was just, it was absolutely amazing.
Oh, it's so much fun, and it still is so much fun, but I don't know, I think maybe because I'm a little bit older now, perhaps, I can still go to a place, I can still go to that same place for me, but it doesn't sound like what people who are coming to a Cat Empire concert are going to want to hear, if that makes sense. It's like a little bit darker.
Yeah,
so,
right.
And also after so many years, you know, honestly, it's just hard to make those moments happen night after night after night. And you know, we've had so many albums since then and so many songs. And I guess we've changed as a band, and we've become a band where, you know, and maybe quite rightly, we have fans and they come to the show and they just want to hear the songs they know. You know, they want to hear all the songs that they have listened to off the albums, and we try and fit as many in as possible. And you know, maybe there's just not that space anymore for that kind of 20-minute detour. So I guess...
You're headed to America, right? Sorry, I just... Kat, you often took it on a different edge.
I'm halfway there. Well, I'm sitting in the airport hotel right now.
So in America, in the jam band scene, that's one area where you can take hours to jam things out. But I mean, that's that more, I don't know. Do you guys play in that scene in America?
About to find out.
Yeah, right.
But we've always we've never really been in any scene. We've just been in our own scene, you know, because there's no other band that does exactly what we do. And
yeah,
I feel like Cat Empire fans are often...
It's an unchanged band in terms of its members from the start, isn't it?
Yeah, all the same people. I mean, there's six of us who've kind of... But there's really eight of us that have been there since the start. It's all our band, and it's also no one's band. It's more like a collective, you know, where... And this has been our great crisis in the age of social media where, as you know, most bands and artists kind of more and more are trying to kind of connect with their fans via social media, and we kind of realized like, but none of us represent the band. Like, no one person in the band kind of feels qualified to speak for the band and say,
wow,
this is what we're all like, you know, because none of us think this. None of us even think the same things. We probably didn't even vote for the same people.
With all of the success that you guys have had, which has been considerable, and I guess you're qualified to say you've had longevity now too. Does that correlate to happiness for you?
Oh, God, Ash. Well, firstly, we got to qualify our terms because happiness, I mean, okay, success makes you feel important, you know, it gives you material comfort, you know, pays my mortgage. Everything's so jumbled up to me. Like, does being in a successful band make me a better musician? I often feel that I was never that good to begin with, you know, and I often, honestly, I can't understand why people always say to me, like, that was great. And I honestly think, what are they seeing in this? Like, what are they seeing that I can't, that's so great about it? so, you know.
That is so bizarre. You must be, like, ultra hard on yourself. My God.
I think I am. Like, I'm a pretty self-critical person. Honestly, social media has killed me because I never looked in a mirror and I never looked at photos of myself my whole life. And then all of a sudden, supposed to be in this world of social media where you kind of post a photo of yourself every day. And it just kills me because it's actually eroding my confidence because I don't like the way I look every time I see a photo of myself. I'm like, oh my God, is that what I look like on stage?
And is that why you're getting fitter?
Probably.
They got to you, man.
Yeah, that's part in the job description. Well, no, it's seriously like I get up on stage I actually feel way less confident than I used to because for the first time ever, I'm thinking about how I look, you know, and it distracts me from my music. In that sense, it's not making me happy right now, but why am I struggling to answer this question? You know why? Because
it's a good question. That's why.
the answer is because I want to be the kind of guy who's happy whatever I was doing. You know, like I always notice it with the air stewards on the plane, especially when I was a vegetarian for a little while and I'd fly, you know, Qantas domestic from Adelaide to Gold Coast or something. And they, you know, they only give you two choices and it would be like meat and meat. And then I'd say to them, oh, do you have anything vegetarian? And about half the air stewards would get really annoyed. They'd be like, no, you had to pre-book it, you know. They'd just be really exasperated. And then the other half of them would be like, oh, look, we don't, but I'll go and see if there's any business class meals left over, or maybe I can find you some cheese and crackers or something. And they'd, you know, I always thought like these people are doing the same job and the only difference is their attitude. And one of them's making it into something rewarding and something that has a human element to it. And the other person is just unhappy, really, I think, or just hating their job, or maybe they're just having a bad day, you know. I really do believe that whatever I was doing, I would have the same attitude, which I don't think I'm happy, but I think I'm pretty wise in general.
Personally, my answer to that question would be probably no matter what happens, it seems that you normalize. Like if you have a level of success, you get used to it and you just normalize. It just becomes normal life. So if you are happy, it's because of your outlook, which I guess is what you're saying. To some extent, you kind of choose your level of happiness, or your level of happiness is something that you do rather than it's something you necessarily are. It's something that it's the way that those stewardesses or stewards are choosing to go into the issue of you not having that meal. You know, that's their choice and it actually dictates how happy they are in that moment.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously I asked them very politely every time. I was never rude myself. That couldn't have been a factor.
I know it wouldn't have been. Okay, well, let me change it up a little bit. New album, dude. Was Stolen Diamonds, was that a single on the album?
The song Stolen Diamonds, that was, in a way, I mean, we did things a bit differently with this album. So we just released nearly every track. We released one a month, and I guess we because we've got these legions of Cat Empire fans, we just basically released them direct to our fans and put them up on Spotify and all that. But having said that, we did have a few songs that we kind of focused on sending to radio and stuff like that, and Stolen Diamonds wasn't one of them.
All right. Well, I was just going to ask you about that. Did you write that one?
Yeah, mainly, yeah.
And what were you basically thinking about there? I mean, something that stood out to me was that sort of one day you wake up and find that you're not invincible at all. Was that talking about something to do with being a performer, or where were you going with that?
Yeah, you know, I think when I wrote those words, they actually had a completely different melody at first. And And I was trying to write a song for Em, because at that time she was feeling like very low confidence with, she had to go and do a gig and she'd had a really rough week. And I wrote that it was going to be like a song for her, but then I never finished.
So can you remember that melody?
Yeah.
How did that go?
It went, one day you'll wake up and you'll find you're not invincible at all. But you still walk out into bright lights. Every heart is beating for you now that it's your birthday. You're the queen of stolen diamonds. That's what you are. Something like that. It sounds weird without the chords, but it was really pretty.
Oh, that was pretty in my headphones here late night, dude, just sitting back. That was very nice. So could you just give us a little bit of what that became?
And that became like it's a much faster tempo when it goes. One day you wake up and you'll find you're not invincible at all. But you still walk out into bright lights. Every heart is beating for you now that it's your birthday. You're the king of stolen diamonds. That's what you are.
Yeah. Ow! That's amazing. That's a really cool thing, I think, for people to hear, because this is something that musicians do a lot of, and I don't think people don't get to hear a lot of it, that we tend to cannibalize different songs and, you know, and mix them together like that.
Absolutely. Oh, man, when I go into it, particularly with the Cat Empire, like Felix, I mean, Felix is really the main songwriter in the band and he's the total opposite. Like he's very, very meticulous and he comes in with songs. He's got all stuff printed out and demos made and stuff. And that's probably why his songs are generally better. But I come in with nothing. I come in with just like really nothing, like nothing finished and a lot of little scraps of ideas. And then I just kind of throw it to the dogs. Inside this mirror, you will find a thousand silver daggers. I've just got this problem with this idea of letting the happy things in and letting the darkness out. And it's confusing because, yeah, like all these people have come up to me over the years and said, you know, you saved my life or you helped me through a really difficult time. The Cat Empire saved my life, you know? And there is a thing where so many people have used the kind of, I guess, the uplift of our music to uplift themselves. But something in it also ties back to what we were talking about just before about that happiness isn't really the goal, you know? Or that it's unstable to be just happy and not let the darkness in. And so as I get older, I kind of disagree with my younger self and a lot of a lot of the music I made in this band, which was, I now think I was in my own self. I was pushing myself to always be happy and excited and positive and energetic. And in fact, I find my younger self really annoying now. He's actually gritting his teeth, you know, and he's actually gritting his teeth and he's going, ah, it's all good, you know, come on, everyone, cheer up. It's like that annoying coworker, you know, come on, guys, it's not that bad. So I guess I'm struggling with this thing at the moment of like, how do I integrate, I think like who I am now and what my personal integrity is with what I'm known for doing in the band. And does it even matter? You know, should I just rock up to work and just, you know, knock out what everyone wants to hear and just give that gift, I suppose, of happiness and positivity. My instinct says no, that I shouldn't do that. That I should, beyond that is Nina Simone, you know, for me. To me, that's the great creative challenge is to embody, I don't know, like, I actually don't know what I'm going to end up doing in the Cat Empire. Recently, I've been kind of really hanging back and just like hanging back and playing trumpet and letting Felix, the other singer, do all the work. And you know, and when it comes time to sing, because I got to sing a few songs, for the first time in my life, I really feel this sense of stage fright of like,
really?
I don't want to be standing in front of all these people, you know?
Wow.
And it's a very strange place to be in, because at the same time, I'm telling myself two things. One is, you know, I guess don't forget that you've got a lot to offer as an artist, because that's what everyone else keeps telling me. And for the first time, I'm really starting to believe it for myself.
Good.
But also, do I want to take this seriously? Like, because I think it would be easy for me to just keep doing, an act that's required of me to do what I've previously done. Like, I can keep doing that, but it would be an act. Or I can dig deeper and find something new, and I really believe it will be more profound, and it will still live in, it'll still be on that same stage with that same band, you know,
with the same songs. Do you mean like, are you referring to just, are you actually just, sorry to cut in on you there, I just wanted to,
no,
when you're talking about it, do you mean within the same performance of, say, an old song, let's say it's one from your first album, is that what you're talking about? You're talking about the performance of it, like digging deep in a different way, or do you mean different material?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I think in many cases you could do it with the same song. I mean, the song's important, but it's certainly not everything.
Mm.
And a song can be sung so many different ways. Mm. No, it's more to do with, I don't even know what it is. I mean, maybe it's all in my head. It's to do with, am I going to, to really stand up on stage and show someone your face, you know, is an incredibly scary thing. And I don't know how many people really do it. I don't even know if it's advisable, but I guess I'm just stuck, you know, and I'm in this kind of crossroads where there's been I feel this kind of endless potential as a singer and as a performer and trumpet player. And at the same time, I feel like just right now, right in this moment, I can't get a grip on it all yet. And it's like, it's almost like I'm unraveled. Like I've gotten to this place where I'm unraveled and I got to build myself back up again into something different, but even stronger. And then, I don't know, have you ever felt like that with your singing? Like when you know, like we've spoken about before, like when you realize that you've got these old tricks that you've been relying on and you try and leave them, put them to the side, it can feel quite scary.
Absolutely. I think I'm quite excited about where my music's headed, because I feel like I'm going through this thing right now, or over the last sort of year, but more so even turning into this year, I've turned the focus onto my voice, and I always thought it was my main thing and, you know, whatever. And I felt, when I started, I felt confident. But, you know, at the moment, I think I'm a bit like you. How I would describe it is half the time I hate it. I'm just like, ah. And I hate when I am doing old patterns and singing like on my throat in an old way, singing songs how I have been singing them for quite a while, at least a decade. And I often feel like I can see a time when my voice will be a hell of a lot freer and a hell of a lot better. But I do feel like there's a lot of hours that I need to spend practicing and learning new things and learning how, like you said, learning how to get out of my own way with it. And I feel like if I put in all of that time and effort and practice, what I want to do is do all of that work so that I can just be 100% free on stage. Yeah, I don't really feel like my voice is where I want it to be by any stretch. But like, you know, just like how you were singing that thing before, I think it goes with trained musicians. even though you said you didn't do vocal lessons until recently, but you can hear, like, I could hear every note of the piano when you sing clearly. Mm. Whereas I don't sing like, I just sing like a guy who learned to play blues guitar and slur through every note. And it's just like, it's a completely different thing. But for me, I'd like to go back and do that work that I never did back in the day when everything was so just, you know, whatever. You know, I did a tour and recorded with the Living End Boys and with Scotty and, on double bass and Andy on drums. And they couldn't believe that I didn't even, like, because I used to play solo, I didn't even rehearse. Like, I'd say to people, rock up to the gig and, you know, it could be Falls Festival or it could be anything. And it'd just be like, it's all about jamming on stage and just making stuff up. And it wasn't really focused on the music, really. I think, that's been the big epiphany for me. It's almost like I'm going back and going back to school and doing my homework. So I don't feel anywhere near where I want to end up with it all.
Man, because when I heard you play at, where was it? The Guitar Festival in Byron Bay. Where I got up and played with you for a song. I've actually never heard a musician. I mean, you always had, you know, your thing in your genre that was really cool and great songs and a great singer and presence on stage and all that. But then I've actually never heard someone who's, like, I knew you'd been practicing guitar, but I've hung around a lot of jazz players who talk a lot about how much they're practicing. I've never actually heard someone, like, suddenly be able to do so much that they weren't doing the last time I saw them, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, that's great.
Amazing.
That's what, like, you want to hear.
Because you have always been like that kind of riffy slide kind of blues player mainly, or from what I've seen. And then all of a sudden you're like Joe Satriani or something, or like Steve Vai, just like
very much no, but
well, no, not quite. Not quite in the 80s cock rock territory, but like just seeing someone all of a sudden have all this facility and ability to express themselves on the instrument that they didn't previously have, as far as I know, like to that level, is so inspiring. It's like, oh, wow,
that's really cool. Well, I thought that. Well, firstly, thank you so much for that. It's really amazing to hear. It's funny because we talked about that when I was at the start of that journey. So then that's really cool for you to come have a little checkup and go, oh, yeah, he's getting there.
I know, because you were like, oh, I'm practicing my, what did you say? You were like, oh, I'm practicing my 16th note runs or something. I'm probably giving away some trade secrets here, but like.
I don't know. I was trying to learn to play 32nd notes, which for 30 everybody.
32nd notes.
For everybody out there, that's going. But, you know, like, because that's what's always eluded me. You know, there's always a level, and there still is, but there was a level of speed that electric guitarists play at. And I had been casting it off for my whole life as, oh, no, I just play tasty. And it's like, yeah, but it'd be cool if you could do that and you were choosing to play tasty, but it wasn't because of any limitation. It was all choice. When I realized that, I thought, maybe I should just learn that. So that's a long road, but geez, it's been exciting. It's just, it's so fun to, and it's like the biggest secret in the world that you can just like do something a little bit every day, or even if you do it a lot every day, if you can, and you can just get way better at it. And it's like some really amazing secret, I think.
Totally.
I wish I sort of, obviously, as soon as you realize that, you think, why didn't I do this earlier? And I guess the truth is, you did do it earlier. You did it in fits and starts to do whatever you wanted to do. But then when your mind got satisfied with a level, for some reason, when your level of ability matched what your mind thought you were capable of, you stopped.
Mm.
Because I always think about that. Don't you think about that with people who are amazing singer-songwriters? And they learn really quickly to play all sorts of rhythm guitar and whatever they want to do to write their songs. And then they never learn any more than that. And then they say, no, I can't.
Well, I mean, I'm going to add a note of caution to that because I come from the jazz world where you've got all these people who, you know, just such masters of their instruments and know everything there is to know about harmony and cannot write a song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's that. When, you know, like when I was coming up and first starting in music, I just, and you guys are the ultimate proof of me not knowing what the hell I was talking about. But I was like, oh, I don't want to be one of those VCA, oh, you know, like those VCA guys. You know, I thought trained musicians wouldn't be good songwriters. And
totally.
Sometimes that's true.
I felt the same way.
Yeah, right. I guess if you're a trained musician and you're aware of that, then that's the difference.
Well, I used to define myself as being like the untrained jazz musician. You know, that was my whole thing. Like, yeah, I can play a bit of jazz, but I don't care about it like all these other jazz guys do. And then it was only later on where I was like, my God, these guys all have like this kind of, this craft, really, this whole craft that they've learned. And I never learned it. I never learned it fully the way some of the, I guess a lot of the really good jazz players have by the time they're my age. Like, it's probably hard to explain to anyone who isn't in that world, but like, you can, a good jazz musician can listen to, a very talented ear musician play through chords, and they'll hear so many things that are harmonically just wrong, you know? but no one else cares. No one else can hear it and no one else knows. But then within that world, there's like, I mean, it's like, how far do you want to go? You know, there's just, jazz is a whole thing and it's beautiful. It's like a beautiful, it's like chess or something like that. It's like you can study it forever and it has its geniuses. And then it has even to be just like a participant, you almost have to be trained to a pretty high standard, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. So I just kind of, I just live in the nether regions between jazz and popular music, which is cool. You know, I can do my trad jazz.
Well, it just makes you like, the thing is like, you know, like I was talking about, we were talking about like saying playing the blues guitar and I'm trying to extend the palette of what's possible. So I've got better options. But when it comes to you, when you come to write a song, you've got this, to me, what looks, seems like an infinite palette of options and places you can go because you understand songwriting and on a deeper level, because so you're like a, if you going from a, as a singer songwriter, you're a highly trained musician. Whereas you'd say as a jazz musician, I'm more of a singer songwriter, but it's such a great spot to inhabit.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. But even I often think like, every idea I come up with, I think, oh no, it's too boring. And often I think I throw away a lot of good ideas because I've got this jazz thing that says like it's got to be harmonically interesting all the time. Whereas of course it doesn't. And then all of that means nothing without lyrics anyway. It's like and you spend so long getting excited about the architecture of the music of the song and then you realize, oh, I got to be a poet as well, you know. I have to be moved to say something. Like, what do I? Have I got anything to say? So then, you know, like that's another challenge for the jazz musician who's may have a very high level of harmony, but may not just have that, I don't know, that wordsmith thing. You know.
And what are your influences when it comes to, I mean, they're also very diverse. But I remember hearing one of your solo songs, and it was this long story with twists and turns and what was that song about the guy he buried a body in it? What was that? What's that one called?
Maddie and Josie.
I will put a link to that. I think you've got a YouTube clip of that up. That's just amazing. Yeah. It's a really long story song with a few good twists and turns in it.
Yeah, well, that whole record was it was stories. Like I was trying to do a short story in every song.
Wow.
And that one was, it was actually a true story, apparently.
What was the story of that one again?
So, well, basically there's this, this guy brings home this bag of bones, and he says to his girlfriend, I killed someone a long time ago, and I've got to move the bones. I'm going to bury them in the backyard. Don't tell anyone. And his girlfriend went to the cops and turned him in, and cops dug up the bones, and then it turns out that it was all a test. You know, they were pig bones, and the guy was testing his girlfriend to see how loyal she was.
Which
and
is
and you know,
up.
And I thought when it, and I thought when I wrote it, I thought, you know, what I want to do is I want to be like a writer. When a writer writes a story, because songwriters, they always have to put themselves into it. Like, this is what I think and this is what I believe. And there's a lot of moralizing. I wanted to write songs where the songwriter is just the storyteller, and you don't necessarily make any moral judgments or tell people what to think. So I just kind of left the story as is, just kind of reported the facts, really. And then it's amazing the amount of people that come up to me after I play that song and they say, mate, I totally agree with you. And then they're either on the boyfriend's side or they're on the girlfriend's side. But they both think the song's written from their perspective, you know?
Wow.
Which goes to show a lot about men's rights activists and feminists just, like, you know, just can't see eye to eye. Because, you know, like, two people can listen to the same story and draw totally different conclusions from it.
Wow.
And assume that I agree with them as well.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I try and think that way. I really feel like as a songwriter, it's such a good thing to just adopt, go into writing a song with a different idea about what you're trying to achieve. Like that, I mean, that just produced some really good stuff.
Oh man, I've done every trick in the book. Like, I've done songs about space. I've done songs about, I've done these short stories. I've done songs about, you know, my last album was all Greek mythology. I've done everything except, you know, I've never written a song about just myself, like how I feel about things.
Wow.
And I think I've been putting it off. And that's kind of, I guess, what I've been getting at with a lot of this stuff. Like, I still feel like I haven't really revealed my whole self as a performer.
Wow, that's interesting. So it's interesting to see what comes up over the next little while then.
Yeah, totally. I'm excited about it.
Well, thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate you. I know you got your flight tomorrow to the States. Best of luck with the tour and everything.
No worries. Thank you. I will.
Yeah, thanks for the chat.
Same to you, mate. Anytime.
And there you have it. And I really must thank Harry so much for such a great and amazing, illuminating podcast, and then just an insight into somebody else's psyche, but also musically, somebody who has a very different skill set to myself, a very trained musician and a very accomplished musician. And I was just editing this podcast, just thinking, my God, how lucky are we to have a format like this? Like, that discussion that you heard there was a discussion between friends. It wasn't, you would never get that from a radio interview or a TV interview. And I think what we're really starting to respect and get used to is that honesty that you get from the podcast format. And we spend a lot of time on Soulful Conversations talking about how to deal with things like digital addiction, like we did in the Ziggy podcast, and keeping yourself on track in a modern digital world. But it is also always great to have some technological gratitude and realize that these conversations that are deeper than normal, that you would normally hear at through your earbuds while you're in a gym, you're hearing it these days, and a million other podcasts as well. And I think as a species, we are learning and developing at a quicker rate because of things like podcasts and YouTubes and people sharing their ideas. So it's good to celebrate that. And we've got a lot more where that came from. I've just been on a road trip and got some really great interviews with Kim Churchill, and I was doing some jamming with Josh Teske from the Teske Brothers. And I've been on the hunt, and I've been trying to get some women into the podcast. I'm still doing a little bit of chasing in that area. But thank you so much for being on this journey. Don't forget that promo code for Earth Bottle Stuff, Ash Loves Me. And also that promo on my website for my merch, you can use the promo code Ash Loves Me as well. And we have those funky boardies that are made from plastic bottles. So pretty on message for us at Earth Bottles and at my merch. So if you go to my website, you can get those 10% off those very, very cool boardies that we're proud of. That's probably my best merch item, actually. And they're made from plastic bottles. It's so rad. I think Quicksilver and Billabong are starting to have those boardies now too. But they are so cool. So until next week, I'll see you later. Inside his lighted window, you will find a thousand stars. Behind his TV screen.